Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, 40 of the top WCW wrestlers will be picked at random to wrestle in a unique tag team format. Then the winners advance to the Battle Bowl, where only one man stands as the winner in Starrcade 91, the Lethal Lottery.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Starrcade 91. This is Battle Bowl, and you're looking live in the Northrop Scope Arena, where tonight 40 of the greatest stars in WCW will be chosen at random to form 20 tag teams, and they'll compete in 10 tag team matches. And hello again, everyone. Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone at ringside, and Tony, the wrestlers must win their tag team matchup to advance to Battle Bowl. And then Battle Bowl is a whole new endeavor.
Battle Bowl is a two-ring battle royal, and the 20 surviving men from the tag team matches, of course, they're at random drawing, will go into one ring. The idea is to dump them over to the next ring and then dump them into the floor. There'll be one man left in ring one man left in ring two. At the end of the night, one man will be the Battle Bowl champion.
Fans, it's going to be something. We're really looking forward to the Lethal Lottery.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you this evening?
I'm doing quite well. And we also have our other co-host on the line, the mastermind behind this show. So if it's horrible, you can blame him. If it's awesome, it's probably going to be because I carried it. But we have Couture on the line. What's going on, Couture?
Well, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be due to some people not watching the show.
Well,
not to me.
But anyway, for those who don't know, we are going to do a show we've actually had in the works for a week. And you'd think if we'd had a show in the works for weeks, it'd be like something major, like WrestleMania or some fucking national fucking thing that changed wrestling forever. But no, we are talking about Starrcade 91 Battle Bowl, which, in my opinion, on one hand, is a horrible, horrible show, and on the other hand, is a fucking awesome, awesome show. It's all depending on how you look at it. But I'll go ahead and let Couture get started since it is his idea and his topic.
I didn't think this so much a bad show. I thought it was a fun show to watch.
It's a show that when you look back at it, you see how much more they could have done, because it actually was kind of a cool, different concept, and you actually could have had some cool, different, matches. But unfortunately, some of the teams, and I seriously doubt there was a freaking, shoot pickings. I'm pretty sure it was a work.
I don't know. There's a couple matches up here were actually shoot drawings that we'll get to, but because I don't know how you come up with some of these. You didn't mean to, but
yeah. The show was very long, and the first two matches went a combined almost 26 minutes, and it was an interesting thing because everybody was jumbled up as such as it was legit. And then the booking of the Battle Bowl itself actually made sense to where there's two rings, and why in the world would you just not hop over to the other ring? Well, here's the thing. If you are the king of that ring, you wrestle the king of the other ring. So it's in your best options to throw as many people out and be the last person in the first ring, because now you are getting a rest period to where the other guy is going to be fighting and fighting and fighting. So the concept of it was really cool, and it was actually very well booked. But like I said, some of those tag teams, and if there was actually some shoot drawing, some of the matches dragged on and on and on and were quite boring. But the main event was fun.
Yeah, I remember at the beginning of the show, it looked like a WCW class picture with all the guys on the stage. Yeah. I mean, there were 40 guys up on the stage just standing there.
That's funny.
I was glad that they didn't make the guys stand up there all night on that stage looking like a bunch of goose 3 hours while they threw these games.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I've never really been into two-ring battle royals, but this was pretty decent, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun, and the story that the main event told was a good one. Basically, what we're doing here tonight, we're going to run down Starrcade 91, and then I have put all the names into a hat. All the names from this show have put into a hat, and we're going to draw names. And,
let me guess, it's a Pro Jam hat.
Actually, it's a wrestling mask, to be honest with you.
I figured it was one of those plastic pumpkins with the handle on it that you had at Halloween.
My wife was kind enough to send me this program on the computer where you could drop names into it and it would randomly pick things, but it would just take way too long and be way too confusing. So I actually printed out the names, and then I'm in here with scissors cutting the names out, and I'm dropping them into the wrestling mask. So, it's very scientific.
Yeah, it's not so much we're fantasy booking the show, because if the show with fantasy book is bad, it's not our fault because we're actually doing a drawing. So
right.
It's not like we're consciously coming up with all these on our own. So
yeah, but when we actually
can be considered working with Vince Russo or anything like that. So
I have a question though. Are you just doing the 20 people who are in the actual pay-per-view, or are you adding the 10 people who were like left out?
No, I took every name. So the first match was Marcus Bagwell and Jimmy Garvin versus Michael Hayes and Tracy Smothers. I took all four of those names. I dropped them into a bowl. So when we go to quote unquote rebook the show, I will pull two names out, and that'll be team number one. And then I'll pull four names out.
I know that, Craig. That's easy to figure out. What I'm asking is, there were more than 20 guys that were on the stage. You know, not everybody who was on that stage got to be in the battle bowl. So what I'm asking is, are we just doing names who were actually in the battle bowl, or did you add the names that?
No, we're supposed to be doing all 40 names.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
Well, there's plenty of guys, so I mean, we're fine. Don't worry.
Okay.
So we're not drawing all 40 names.
I didn't have 40 names here. I got. Let me see.
No, there's 40 names because
there were
10 matches, so that's 40
okay,
names.
That's everybody on the show, so we're just drawing everybody on the show again.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have 40 names.
Okay.
We'll pull two, and that'll be the first tag team. We'll pull another two, that'll be the second tag team. We'll have a debate on who would win, and they will go into the quote-unquote Battle Bowl.
Okay, I figured we would draw the names like for the first match, and then we would just talk about the actual first match in front of the pay-per-view, and then after that, do another drawing. How's that?
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay. I just thought it'd be easier that way.
It might be a little more confusing to keep all the names together, but I'll figure it out.
Okay.
So, in match one, we had Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
Why don't we just draw our first match, and then we'll review the first match from the pay-per-view. How's that?
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Okay, so I'm going to pull two names. This is going to be our first tag team. You can hear me rummaging around my drawer here to get a pin, because this might get confusing. Okay, I'm pulling a name out of my tumbler, quote-unquote. The first name, Jushin Liger and his tag team partner, Sting. That's a good team.
Yeah. Already better.
Okay. All right.
You're actually going to tell me that Sting is a better wrestler than Bill Kazmaier? Come on now.
Yeah.
And they will be facing the team of Richard Morton, that is Ricky Morton for you historians, and his tag team partner, Rick Rude.
That's a pretty good match.
That is a good match. That's a great match.
Yeah, that's like a totally different tag team that you would never see together. I mean, two total babyface and total heel on the same team. Mm-hmm. It's actually a perfect matchup because you got like two of the best lightweights and Liger and I shouldn't say Richard Morton was one of the best lightweights. Ricky Morton was one of the best lightweights. But then you have the top feud at the time, which was Sting and Rick Rude, and that's a big way to start off the show.
Yeah, and they were playing off the Clash of the Champions where Rude beat Sting for the U.S. title. And Sting had to go to the hospital, hurt his leg, had to go to the hospital, and then came back in the ambulance, but then he lost the match. So, yeah, that's a good match to start with.
That's a great curtain jerker right there.
Yep.
So on the pay-per-view itself, we had Marcus Bagwell and Jimmy Garvin. They defeated Michael Hayes and Tracy Smothers in 12 minutes and 45 seconds, by the way. And this match, as good as all four of these guys, to be honest, are, it was quite boring in this reporter's opinion.
I thought it was a good way to start the show off just because, you know, you had the whole idea of the legal lottery with the three birds on the opposite sides. So,
yeah, but to me they kind of overdunk it because they're trying to make it sound like anything can happen. So right off the bat, they try to make anything happen by Hayes and Garvin, and that's right there where you're thinking this shit ain't real. But I enjoyed it when Jimmy and Michael Hayes actually started wrestling. That was actually pretty cool.
Yes.
They were way on the downsides of their careers, but they were. I enjoyed them as a tag team at this time, and it didn't matter who they had with them, whether it was Little Richard Marley or Bad Street or whoever. Mm-hmm. You know, they were. I was always entertained by the Freebirds at this time. Bagwell was actually.
Big Daddy Dink, who was Oliver Humperdinck in biker gear.
Bagwell was young and coming in, and, you know.
He was actually a at this time, Bagwell was. He was pretty good.
Yeah, he wasn't a known douchebag at this time.
Yeah, hey, don't talk about Bagwell and coming in right now. My gosh. Too soon. You know the news.
And then
he's had a meeting with Vivid Video, I hear. Which
that's what I heard.
And then Tracy Smothers, he was always for Doug. Well, they were awesome when they were the Southern Boys, and not
yes.
so awesome when they were the Young Pistols. What were they, the Southern Boys or Young Pistols here?
They were the Young Pistols. They just turned heel, which was weird. Because they had been feuding with the great tag team of the WCW Special Forces, the Patriots, Todd Champion and Chip the Firebrick, which will be coming up pretty soon.
Yikes.
Okay, he's a very good wrestler. I thought he was underrated.
Okay, I'm going to roll the tumbler here.
Okay.
Okay. Next match. First up, Brian Pillman and his tag team partner, El Gigante.
Who?
El Gigante,
okay.
Elegante, yes, I'm sorry. I stumbled over my words. And they will be facing the team of Larry Zbyszko and Todd Champion.
That's kind of a boring team, but the Elegante Brian Pillman makes sense because wasn't it Elegante who busted in through the War Games cage to save Brian Pillman from Sid Vicious after Sid Vicious almost broke his neck legit fucked up power bomb and then came with
second. And then picked him up again and did it again.
Yeah, but it was El Gigante that saved poor little Brian Pillman.
Yeah, he came in there and he submitted for Pillman. And it was also in the match like a few months later when they were a team, they lost to Barry Windham and Arn Anderson, and Pillman had to leave WCW and then the yellow dog showed up.
Yeah, well, they should have gone all the way and had him be the dirty yellow dog like he was supposed to be. But as far as Larry Zbyszko and Todd Champion, I know Couture hates Larry Zbysko, and he wasn't that great watching in the ring, but I actually thought he was a great interview. And
I don't hate Zbysko. I mean, I didn't like watching him, but as a personality, I thought he was great.
Yeah, the personality was great, I enjoyed the stalling, the first part of the stalling of the match. When they started working the match, then it wasn't as exciting. But I thought nobody was better, in my opinion, of stalling a match, except for maybe Jerry Lawler. And, I always kind of enjoyed that. And he was always a great, he was just such a douchebag, He was so obnoxious douchebag. When I first saw Larry Zbysko, he bought the national title from Killer Tim Brooks, who had beat Paul Orndorff from it, and then they took it away from him because you're not supposed to buy a title and stuff, and just total God, I hated him, but he was a good announcer.
I liked him when he was in the ring. I liked him when he and Arn Anderson teamed as the enforcers. I thought they were a good team.
Yeah,
you put almost anybody with Arn Anderson, they're going to be pretty good, so I liked him then. But as far as just like him wrestling, like a singles, I didn't care much for him.
And Todd Champion was just kind of like a very, very generic kind of taller version of, like, if you wanted to, like, replace Sting or have, like, make a copy of Sting, you'd kind of pick, like, a Todd Champion, but he just didn't have personality. And, he was okay, but he just wasn't a superstar. He was just a dude.
Yeah, he was kind of like he started like in Crockett, kind of like an enhancement guy, but he was kind
of
too big.
He was one of the new breed.
Talent.
He was one of the new breed, wasn't he?
No, that's Chris
Todd Royal. No, Chris Champion and Todd Royal. He was Todd Royal.
Sean Royal was the Chris Champion. That's not Todd Champion. That's not Todd Champion.
Oh, well, my mistake.
So the second match on our show, on the pay-per-view, was Steve Austin and his partner Rick Rude. They defeated the amazing team of Van Hammer and Big Josh. Again,
whose idea was it to put Van Hammer in a 12-minute match?
Almost 13.
Yeah.
I think the same person's idea was to sign him in the first place.
That's fair.
Well, he had a look. But Steve Austin and Rick Rude, they actually teamed somewhat because, they were like the main guys in the Dangerous Alliance, and they teamed in other things. And this is where Stone Cold was just really, really coming into his own. And this is when Rick was at the top of his game. Big Josh, no one really took him too seriously, but he was actually pretty good. I mean,
I remember seeing
him and Arn Anderson wrestle all the time on, like, Sunday's main event or Saturday, and they always have good matches. And Van Hammer, he's like Sid Vicious. He had the look, but, at least Vicious had personality. Van Hammer didn't have any personality. And the best thing he was ever involved in was that match where Abdullah took Missy in the fucking horse trough.
Yeah, and he had a Falls Count Anywhere match with the Cactus Jack and the Clash of the Champions in 92. And he was like, I think it was like 20 degrees outside. Missy didn't know that was about to happen. I think she was like legit pissed off.
Also, on this show, it goes without saying, but Missy Hyatt, at the time of her career, a very attractive lady. And even with the bad 80s hairstyle, yes, it was the 91, but she still had the 80s hairstyle.
'80s hairstyles are like some of the greatest hairstyles ever. I mean, if you want to add hotness to a chick, add Aquafina. I mean, Aquanet. Add a can of Aquanet to any chick.
Actually, you add Aquafina to a chick, and she gets hotter, too. So, anyway. Okay, match number 3 in our big to-do here. We have Dustin Rhodes.
Okay.
And his tag team partner, PN News.
Oh, gosh.
Yikes. They will be facing Van Hammer and Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, well, I think
we'll make it the same, right?
Legitimate booking just got worse than the worked one.
I like Dustin and I like Mr. Hughes, but the other two?
Yeah.
You know, they almost brought P and News in WWE a couple years ago. Did you know that?
Seriously?
Explain.
As what?
Yeah.
Was he going to be voted for air something?
Make him a heel tag team and team him with Daniel Bryan. It's team No Baby, No Baby, No. I've been saving that one since yesterday when I thought about it. I wrote it down.
The funny thing
is... I thought Craig told horrible jokes on Facebook, but that didn't top anything Craig's ever said.
How dare you. The funny thing is Dustin Rhodes was actually in the third match on the pay-per-view. And he teamed with Richard Morton, and they defeated Larry Zbyszko and El Caliente. Say that name
for me.
You say Ellie Gundy's name like Ed would say it, and he doesn't know how to say it right.
That's true. El Galiente. It's spelled Gig Ante.
El Gigante.
El Gigante.
There's no E in there.
It should be.
Anyway.
Spanish, Craig, is not American.
I know
it should
comprendo
be
El Gigante.
El Mexicano.
It's like it's Royce Gracie when it's actually Royce Gracie, or it's Jose Aldo when it's actually Jose Aldo. You know, you got to adjust for the native tongue, and native tongue says El Gigante.
Anyway, the big dude, Team Larry Zbyszko.
The other team, actually, if it was not Richard Morton and it was actually Ricky Morton and Dustin Rhodes would actually have been an awesome fucking tag team.
Well, if you remember earlier that year, they were a team. You remember he turned on it to go with the York Foundation.
That's right. That's fucking right. The York Foundation was a very young Terry Reynolds, just like a little kind of like a little bit of a business librarian kind of a look.
Where the computer would tell her how to win the matches.
Yeah, and then that the computer was going to talk. But the computer was always wrong because her guys never won the matches. And then somehow she, like, ruined the relationship between Dustin Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes somehow.
Well, that was in real life.
I never really got that.
Yeah, I never really got that whole story.
That's what I was saying. Why wouldn't he be happy his son is banging a hot chick? I mean...
I don't know, maybe he was trying to bang her. You know that he's working in the same place.
Yeah, that's true.
Go out of your way, by the way, go out of your way and find the Chris Jericho podcast with Goldust and Stardust from this last week. It's good stuff.
Are they in character?
No. Total shoot. Good stuff.
I remember at the end of this match, I think Zbyszko got pissed off and slapped Ellie Gunte and he threw him in the ring and Dustin and Ricky Morton or something.
That was the best part was when Larry had jumped off the ring apron. He's on the floor and El Gigante reaches down and grabs him by the top of the hair and pulls him all the way fucking back up by the hair. That was
like Cesaro doing that Superman suplex. You know, he grabs him or he's like almost on the top rope and they're like standing on the apron or something. He muscles them up.
But this one is like Zbyszko has to hold on for dear life or he's losing a lot of hair.
Yeah. Okay. Going back to the quote-unquote Tumblr, match number 4. We have Lex Luger and his tag team partner, Scott Steiner. Good team. They will be wrestling Mike Graham. Oh, jeez. And Big Josh.
Oh, God. Well, if it was a shoot, it was an actual shoot match, then my Graham team would be winning.
You can get Steiner in there.
But I guess Steiner didn't look the way he did, you know, a few years later. Like, you could have had two of the best bodies in all of pro wrestling at the time, but Steiner hadn't. He was just juiced up and not super juiced up at the time. This is when I thought Steiner was at his best, really. I mean, because he could still kind of do the athletic moves. He was powerhouse. You did say Scott, right? Isn't that Rick?
Yeah, Scott.
Okay, yeah.
Yes,
and then Luger, you know, Luger was still, still decent at this time. And, we talked about Big Josh a few minutes ago. I mean, he was, he'd have a good match with those two dudes. Mike Graham, I think he gets shit on. He's kind of like Greg Gagne. He gets shit on more than he probably should, because he was a good worker back in the day, even though he was small, and he decided he needs to take credit for everything that ever happened in pro wrestling.
Are we sure he didn't create this event? Battle Bowl?
Yeah. He probably did. Didn't he take the squeegee away from Sid?
Yes. Sid
that's like one of the funniest things. Is like this little dude took the raging psychotic steroid tall monstrous freak took his weapon away from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Sid and Brian Pillman had a confrontation in a bar or something,
mm-hmm.
And so Sid left and went to get a weapon. He came back with a squeegee. You know, the things
that's
that
right.
The homeless people try to clean your windshield with in the big
yes.
cities when you're stuck at the light
mm-hmm.
or in traffic.
Yes.
And my Graham took it away from him.
And then just a few years after this, I've told the story famously hundreds of times. I see a young Brent Kremen, before I even knew his name, yelling at Sid at a WWE house show, at Sid, why did you stab Marty Lundy? And then he threw a cup of ice at Sid and was escorted outside of the Tacoma Dome. Now, fast forward just probably 6-8 months. WWE is making a swing through town. They're going to be in Vancouver for the International Incident pay-per-view.
Yes.
They're going to be in Seattle for 4 hours of Raw tapings. And then they're going to be in Yakima for the Superstar tapings. Brian tells me, I'm kind of worried. I'm going to this show with this guy, Brent. Apparently he gets thrown out of the Tacoma Dome for throwing some ice at Sid. Oh, my gosh, I saw the whole thing happen. Brian, don't go with this man. He's a crazy man. Here's the comedy. They do, we all went to the shows. I didn't go with Brian at the time because I hardly knew the man. But we go to International Incident, we go to Raw, I meet up with Brian after the show, and we chat for a bit, and then we all carpool over to Yakima. Somewhere in between Seattle and Yakima, Brian convinces Brent to buy a squeegee. And if you watch the Superstars tapings from that show, there is a madman waving a squeegee in the front row on the camera side. And you just see the squeegee back and forth, and Sid's in the ring. It's hysterical.
This is at the Raw taping or the pay-per-view?
This is at the Superstars tapings.
Okay.
Now did he refer to him as Sid Vicious or by his shoot name?
I think he referred to him as Sid, and we'll leave it at that.
Did you ask him why he's referring to one by his work name and the other one by his shoot name?
I didn't know the shoot name of the other guy.
Very possible.
He should have just called him like Dave named him from the Observer back then, called him Cycle Sid.
I just remember, I mean, I'll never forget, one of the things I'll never forget from Brian's wedding was Friday night, we were hanging out by the pool at this hotel. And it's me, Rodney, Todd Martin, and Dave. And then we're just all talking about different things. Brent is there a little bit. And then Brent Kerman shows up and starts arguing with Dave about, like, legitimate shoot wrestlers from, like, the 30s or 20s. And I don't even remember what the argument was, but it had something to do with legitimate wrestlers. And Dave is calmly explaining everything to Brent, and Brent would ask a different question and Dave would explain it, but Brent refused to accept these answers and just kept arguing with Dave. And just the look on Dave's face, I've never seen Dave get annoyed talking wrestling to anybody. Usually you talk wrestling to Dave, he's happy. Even if he didn't like you, you talk wrestling to Dave, he will talk to you. And for, Dave just had this look of like, leave me alone and shut the fuck up. It was awesome.
And you guys were too busy with watching the spectacle to do anything about it?
Absolutely.
I was trying to help Dave. I was trying to explain to Brent what he was saying, and he just wasn't having it.
I was just watching like with binoculars and to, you know, like observe Brent in his natural habitat, like I'm at the botanical gardens or something. I don't know.
It's... Being around Brent is like knowing that there's a car wreck coming, and you can't really do anything to stop it, so you just wait for the aftermath.
Part of you doesn't, right? Part of you doesn't want to stop it.
Well, you would never throw yourself in the path of a moving car.
But I just remember the first time me and Ronnie had saw Brent. We saw him walking in, and I said this before. We thought he was with the tiny little Asian man. It turned out he was Brian's Mexican dad. But I told Ronnie, do you want to go talk to Brent, or you just want to watch? I said it just like that. Or do you want to watch him for a while? And Ronnie's like, let's just observe him. Let's just watch.
I'd be afraid he'd take a shine to me for the rest of the evening, you know, you want to follow me?
He would have sold you some bananas like he did from the buffet. He just stuck a whole thing of bananas and they're all bulging out of his shirt. But he's laughing as he made a break for it with four bananas.
Remember, you never feed the stray cat because they just hang around.
Yeah. And then the best part, and I'll never forget this, and this will be my last story, is we are sitting in our chairs outside. The wedding is about to start. It's Ronnie on one side, and Lance is on the other side. Or maybe Lance is, like, right in front of us. I don't remember. But anyway, Brent comes up behind him and asks, have you seen Lance Storm? I want to introduce him to somebody. And Lance just barely moved his head to the side slightly and said, no. And that was it. Turned his head back. Oh, that was awesome.
Number four was Bill Kazmaier and Jushin Liger. They defeated Diamond Dallas Page and Mike Graham.
You keep picking like the same people, or at least one of the people in one of the matches that we were doing.
Yeah, I know.
Luger was so awesome. Unfortunately, except for when Bill Watts was in charge, because, you know, no top rope shit, and then they put him with fucking Bill Kazmaier. And for those who don't know, Bill Kazmaier was one of those world's strongest men type dudes who could bend bars and rip phone books, and was actually a very impressive dude as far as strength-wise. I mean, he was a strong dude. Thing is, he could barely move. He was very slow. And I give him credit because I think he tried to be a wrestler. He just wasn't very good at it.
I remember him. Another guy that I remember, kind of like him, was remember Ted Arcidi?
He was better than Ted Arcidi, though.
Yeah, but I mean, just being a big guy, you know, like the power lifters coming into wrestling. What I mean?
Yeah, basically they're the same. They're basically the same dude. I think Kazmaier was just a little better, but he basically the same dude, just a big, strong, super dude. And Diamond Dallas Page was not DDP at this time. He was far from it. And, you know, when he first started, I didn't think he was very good. I got to give him credit, though, because that motherfucker he went from being horrible in the ring to being pretty damn awesome, in my opinion, in his prime in the NWO era. And like I said, Mike Graham was a good little wrestler. I mean, he wouldn't make it today because he's not flashy and he's too short. But for the territory days in the 80s and stuff, he was a good little hand. And he could work, and he had some fire. And, you know, I think he gets shit on more than he should, but a lot of it is he is bringing it on himself because he does make some pretty outrageous claims.
He was kind of a big mouth. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, but this is like one of those that it seems like a legitimate draw, a blind draw that they did. I mean, this is Jushin Liger's like live pay per view debut in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
This is the match they put him in.
Yeah.
I mean,
Okay, back to the tumbler. I'm mixing them up here.
Who won that match, by the way? Bill Kazmaier.
Oh, Luger.
Yeah,
because Luger was in the Battle Bowl.
Liger, not Luger.
Liger.
Oh, Liger, whatever.
Okay. So, we have Diamond Dallas Page on team number one, and his partner, Buddy Lee Parker. And they will be wrestling Abdullah the Butcher. Please let it be Cactus Jack. Just for funsies. Oh, Bobby Eaton.
Who? Buddy Lee Parker can't escape Abdullah. He just, you know, no matter what he does.
I didn't hear who the last pick was.
Bobby Eaton.
Oh, Bobby Eaton. Could you say both teams again, Craig?
Diamond Dallas Page and Buddy.
Diamond Dallas Page.
Abdullah the Butcher and Bobby Eaton.
Poor Buddy Lee Parker. Can't get away from Abdullah.
Yeah, he couldn't get away from Abdullah, neither one of them. But, yeah, that's the first team. Because, like I say, you know, DDP wasn't, you know, he was still kind of just above a jobber at the time. And Buddy Lee Parker was always a jobber as part of the, was it the State Patrol?
Yeah, State Patrol. They were a decent little tag team. You know, if you want to go for a TV match or something, they could have a good match with like one of the other tag teams, like Young Pistol or somebody.
And Buddy Lee Parker was also a leprechaun, wasn't he?
Yes, in the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah, and he would bite people.
And the head trainer at the power plant.
Yeah, he was the head trainer who would run you till you puked and quit. And
I think he ran Batista off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was running off the Big Show?
Power plant.
Yeah.
So the next pay-per-view.
He deserved better than that.
The match from the pay-per-view was Lex Luger and his partner Arn Anderson, and they defeated Terrence Taylor and the Z-Man.
I thought this was the best match on the show, and not only was this the best match on the show, but I thought Terry Taylor was the best worker on the show. He was awesome in this match.
Well, he was awesome in general. Just people forget about him because of the Red Rooster or just the Terrence Taylor gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, you got Luger and Anderson. That's actually a decent team. And they had a Harley Race with them. And then the Z-Man, you know, the Z-Man was always pretty good. He was always like a poor man's Rick Martel, you know, basically. He looked good.
Mm-hmm.
He could do a lot of stuff. He was decent. You know, he's kind of turned into a psychopathic douchebag fucking drunk or something. He's called on Wrestling Observer Live years later, and then he disappeared off the face of the earth. I think he got paid off the shut up. Basically.
Somebody came up with some pictures of him from a few years ago when he got arrested for DUI on the board.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can see it because everyone remembers his calls to the original Wrestling Observer Live on IATA. First one was awesome. Second one was good, but not as good. And then it just slowly went down. They slowly went down in quality, and he got drunker per appearance.
He started coming off like a loon or something like that. I don't know. He was
He came. He started coming off as like a douchebag. Like there was one show I remember where he just starts going off about Pat Patterson being gay and shit involving Pat for like no reason because they weren't even talking about Pat. He just put out there. You know what I mean? I mean he kind of like I guess he got all this response the first time he was on because the first time he was on was awesome. It was really really good. And then it's like he kind of bought into his own hype and kind of became his own gimmick over the next shows and just try to be more controversial, and he just came off more as a douchebag, in my opinion.
Still the hardest I've ever heard Dave Meltzer laugh when he did the line when he was, like, in the office and he was arguing with, like, I don't know who he was arguing with, and he said, you're paying Sting all this money and all the fans in the audience are just like chairs. This was a tremendous Anderson, I always said he'd suck cock all day for like $750,000 a year or something like that. And Dave kind of, oh my God.
Yeah, he didn't laugh as much on that one as the first one.
No,
he kept trying to top himself, and by him trying to top himself, he just started to come off bad.
Yep.
But
this was a great match with, I believe, Luger pinned Pierre Taylor with the power driver, which at the time, ironically, called the attitude adjustment at this point, was the name he gave his power driver. So.
Okay, back to the tumbler. It's Akranaman?
Aragnaman.
Okay.
Aragnaman.
It's Brad Armstrong. And he was doing like the Spider-Man gimmick to a Marvel fan.
I see. Okay. Aragnaman.
And he had to go back to being Brad Armstrong.
He used to throw streamers from his hands like they were wet. They were blue. It was a blue and yellow costume, and goddamn, it made him look like a goof.
His tag team partner, Big Van Vader.
Okay.
That's a good team.
Mass team.
They'll be wrestling.
At least.
They'll be wrestling Steve Armstrong and Tracy Smothers.
Wow. That's the Young Pistols.
This is,
Southern Boys.
This thing is rigged.
So we got two brothers on opposite sides. Two legit brothers.
Right. This drawing is a work, dude. That's the only way I can explain that.
That actually sounds like a decent matchup.
Yeah, I mean, because Vader, you know, would have been the big monster, you know, and then Brad is, you know, Brad was just fucking awesome, regardless if he was in a stupid costume or not. And then, like I said, the Southern Boys were awesome. The Young Pistols, not so much. It's so weird how a name changed and now.
Well, they were okay with the Young Pistols. It's just they had a stupid name. That stupid gimmick.
I guess that's what it was. But as a Southern boy, they were awesome. I remember that.
Hey, everybody go to the WWE Network and click on go to the 1990 Great American Bash and watch Southern Boys against Midnight Express. You want to see? Awesome. I think it might have even won Match of the Year in the Observer that year. If not, it was runner up.
Yeah, that's what I remember them from. That match was awesome.
I remember when when Tracy Smothers came to Smoky Mountain, he talked about how they made him be the Young Pistols, and he had never even been to Wyoming before.
That's funny. I love Tracy Smothers in Smoky Mountain. Let me rephrase that. I loved Smoky Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like Freddie Joe Floyd in WWE?
No. I also didn't like Teal Hopper in WWE as well.
He was a thing in the FBI with Lil Guido.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they were in ECW.
Yeah.
And they had Tommy Rich was the big guy, and he was the manager.
I'll never forget. I remember the first, the first pay-per-view I saw of ECW, I think it was the second one, and they're having that big scramble tag team match, and New Jack comes in with all the weapons and he has a big-ass guitar, and he comes down on Tommy Rich and crushes it on Tommy Rich's head, and Tommy Rich just fucking, like, starts doing, like, some kind of, almost like a dance or something, the way he's just waving back and forth before he falls covered in blood. It was awesome.
Yeah, let me explain that, because I was thinking the exact same thing. New Jack hits the ring. He grabs a guitar. He hits Tracy Smothers with it, Tommy Rich with it, and in one fell swoop, he goes and gigs himself as he's standing in the middle of the ring. Well, now he's putting pressure on his face to get the blood flowing, and so he's turning purple as the blood is streaming down his face, and he's basically cutting a jig in the middle of the ring selling the guitar shot. And he's dancing around, his head's purple, and the blood is just flowing from his forehead. It was absolutely
incredible. An incredible thing. That was one of my introductions to ECW.
That was
amazing.
Speaking of ECW, if you haven't checked out the Paul Heyman documentary, you should. It's awesome.
I've heard that, yes.
Why don't you burn it and send it to me?
So match number six on the pay.
Go online and then pay for it and watch it legally and support the film.
There you go. I was trying to gloss over that. Match number six on the pay-per-view.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You can go like on one of these like Target Ticket or like Amazon Prime or Amazon Instant and rent it for $3.99 and watch it on your computer. So
that's
written for documentary. So
okay. So match number six on the pay-per-view, we had Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion. They defeated Cactus Jack and Buddy Lee Parker.
This is awesome.
This is the best part of the whole fucking pay-per-view, okay? Because
absolutely.
Pretty damn good.
they're basically drawing the names, and basically Cactus and Abdul the Butcher want a team because they're a team. They draw Cactus, and then they draw Buddy Lee Parker, who gets very excited about fucking being kicked and getting to be on fucking pay-per-view. I think this would be his first pay-per-view match. And then Abdullah the Butcher proceeds.
Actually, earlier in the year, the State Patrol teamed with Mr. Hughes against the Junkyard Dog, Ricky Morton, and Tommy Rich in a six-man title match.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, but still, this is still like a big thing for him to be on pay-per-view. He's all happy. And then Abdullah the Butcher proceeds to take a kendo stick and beat the living fuck out of this poor little man. I mean, he killed him forever. It went on forever. And basically, it was
the fucker's head into the locker. I mean, brutally. I mean, like, he was killing this poor fucker.
Yeah, and then Abdullah wants to kind of, like, go and be Cactus's partner, but they won't let him. So basically, Cactus goes out there. The heel goes on and takes on the total babyface team of Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion. And he's fighting, and then slowly, after a few minutes, Buddy Parker crawls through the stage thing or whatever they came out with, and then he slowly proceeds to and dramatically crawl on all fours, crawls to the fucking down the fucking ramp into the ring, and he climbs with all his heart up onto the apron, and he's barely hanging over the second rope, and Captain Jack makes the tag, and throws him in, and he comes in and takes a flying splash from Ricky Steamboat and gets pinned, and it was just fucking awesome. It was the greatest thing ever, the best thing on that show by far.
Yeah, it was pretty damn awesome. And then Cactus Jack and Abdullah beat each other up, I think, after the match. That might have been Abdullah's match coming up that he was in. I can't remember. One of them. They beat each other up.
What were your thoughts on the match, Craig?
The spectacle of Cactus Jack and Abdullah, just tremendous throughout this whole storyline, and it leads into the next match as well, and I loved it.
Well, what did you think of Buddy Lee Parker and his big WrestleMania moment?
Buddy Lee Parker getting his keister handed to him, absolutely tremendous. I don't think I would take anything from Abdullah. If I was on a show and, okay, Craig, you're going to be wrestling Abdullah, I would just leave.
Brian told me, we know.
Brian told me he was really afraid that Abdullah was going to gig him at one point, just for the fun of it. Legitimately concerned.
Yeah, Abdullah, he pretty much killed off the Observer shoot series.
Yeah. Nice job. Okay, back to the Tumblr, because we've got 40 minutes of time left. Need to speed things up a little bit. We got Steve Austin. That's a fine name. And his partner, Firebreaker Chip.
Okay.
And they will be wrestling the Z-Man and Jimmy Garvin.
It's kind of a mixed match team. I mean, they're like so uncommon. You know what I mean? There's nothing really connecting them that I can think of. I mean, Stone Cold, like I said earlier, this kid's coming into his prime. And I'm guessing Lady Blossom was gone by this point. Oh, man.
Yeah, he was Lady Blossom at this point.
Lady Blossom was in wrestling far too short of a time. That woman, God, she has some giant breasts. And Firebreaker Chip actually got his start in your neck of the woods, Craig, as
Curtis Thompson.
What was his name? Curtis Thompson. He used to team with
Ricky Santana.
With what?
He teamed with Ricky Santana.
Oh, he did? Okay, well, wasn't another team, but when I first heard of him, he was teaming with Walker. What the hell is his name?
Chris Walker.
Chris Walker, yes. That's when I
first
heard about
him. Just walked it in. Kind of looked like a renegade or jungle gym.
He looked like you know what he looked like? He looked like if Scott Simpson or Steve Simpson was on the Juice and was huge. That's what, because him and Steve teamed in Global, and they looked like Little Brother, Big Brother.
Yeah.
But yeah, he started off in Portland. That's what I remember. He had a good physique. He was kind of short but powerful. I think there was some shit where DDP was having a match in his hometown and fucking Firebreaker Chip fucking took the whole match or something, made him look bad or whatever, and they almost had a fight after the show or something.
I remember he teamed in Portland. I think he teamed with Ricky Santana as the U.S. males. They were mailmen.
See, I thought that was the Chris Walker team, but I guess that's before then.
Yeah.
And so the match number 7 on the pay-per-view was Sting and Abdullah the Butcher. They defeated Brian Pillman and Bobby Eaton. That's a team right there. Pillman and Eaton.
I remember Abdullah, he was so excited to team with Sting. He had this big smile on his face when he was coming down to the ring, and then he starts beating Sting up with the kendo stick when he gets there.
I don't know what's scarier, Abdullah having his mean face or Abdullah smiling at you.
They're both terrifying, let's be honest.
I think if he was smiling at me, I'd be even more scared.
Yeah.
I would say Abdullah in Las Vegas at the poker tables where he has his chips and he just sticks them in the divots in his head.
And Lance gigged for him one time.
What now?
Lance gigged for him in Japan one time.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He said he made sure to get enough color so Abdullah wouldn't go in for more.
That sounds like a match for the Twilight Zone. Abdullah the Butcher and Lance going.
But Brian Pillman and Bobby Eaton, I mean, was Brian Pillman, I guess he was still babyface at this point.
Yeah,
you talk about two dudes who are just awesome. I remember Bobby Eaton's little babyface run where he was awesome. I mean, he was super awesome. I wish it would have gone more with it. I mean, he had that awesome match with Ric Flair. Unfortunately, it was 2 out of 3, and they gave both pins a Flair. They didn't even let him get one. But that was a good
run. He pinned Flair in the first fall. Yep.
Okay. Well, the way I just remember it wrong then or something. But, that little babyface run he had, that was when he was at his peak, and he was fucking awesome. And you know, this basically was just storyline with Abdullah and Cactus.
I just thought he was at his best in, like, 1988 when he was still with the Midnight Express. That's probably my favorite point with him.
Okay.
And have this match end, Sting pinned Bobby Eaton. And then Sting and Brian Pillman celebrated, even though Brian Pillman just lost the match.
All right, match number 8, back to the Tumblr. We have the Night Stalker and his tag team partner, Arn Anderson.
Poor Arn.
Yeah, poor Arn. They'll be facing the team of Cactus Jack and Tommy Rich.
The Night Stalker, for those who don't know who the Night Stalker was, the Night Stalker was later on became Adam Baum, and then later on became basically Wrath, hanging out with Mortis, and then he became just Brian Clark, and
he's a former Zillion Award winner.
That's
what? Right. Worst match of the year the previous year was the Night Stalker against Sid. Everybody go to the WWE Network to the Clash of the Champions in November of 1990.
Okay. And to describe what he looked like, if anyone's seen X-Men Days of Future Past, he looked like a jacked-up Warpath because he had makeup around his eyes. And he kind of tried to look like he was some kind of, like, warrior-type dude, and he had a big-ass battle axe with him.
I remember before he was, at one point he was managed by Ox Baker. I remember.
What?
Managed by Ox Baker. Remember Ox Baker?
Ox Baker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
He was from AWA, right?
Yeah, he was from the AWA, and he had like a big handlebar mustache. If you've seen him, you'd know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. He was in Escape from New York. He got hit with a baseball bat and nails. He had the heart punch. Supposedly, he killed the man in the ring.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think it was Austin Baker was like originally managed him for just like a very short time. But
Especially
since he's like the Night Stalker, Adam Baum. I mean, he was pretty agile for a big guy later on in his career.
Yeah, he got better. I mean, he definitely got better. I mean, he never really got great, but, I mean, he got better because the Night Stalker was just, I don't even know if he was trained the way he was so bad, you know. And then who else was on the other match, the other team?
Cactus Jack and Tommy Rich.
Okay, now, unfortunately, this is Tommy Rich way past his prime. Did have his little resurgence in ECW. But Tommy Rich is always a good hand. I mean,
Absolutely.
At this point, he could still have good matches. He just wasn't taken serious. What happened to Tommy Rich, because a lot of people might not realize that at one point Tommy Rich was the top babyface in all of pro wrestling. The only thing is he had a early 80s body, and he didn't get into steroids when everyone else did, and everyone else's body changed, and it just didn't look right where you had just a normal dude. Skinny fat, I guess, is the term or whatever, and he just didn't carry on.
And then he had in his career where he got like really out of shape, even worse.
Yeah, he did. He even got worse out of shape. While everyone was getting in better shape, he kind of got in worse shape. But he was a really good wrestler, and when he was a top babyface, he had awesome matches with Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer and the Superstar, and he could bleed like we were talking about it earlier, like nobody's business. And he's actually the reason I got into pro wrestling the way I am, and first is a big reason for Tommy Rich, because I never even knew what pro wrestling was. I never even thought there was such a thing. I thought wrestling was just horseplay that you did with your friends. And then we got cable in the late 70s, and I remember flipping through the channels, and I actually had to be at the box to push the button to change the channels. You know, there was no remote control at this time. And I put it on channel 12, which was the WTBS at the time. and I see some platinum blonde guy throw this guy into a corner, and he jumped on top of him, and he starts punching him, and I hear this distinct voice say, that's why they call him Wildfire, and I just freaked the fuck out, and I remember yelling to my mom. I'm like, Mom, there's some guy kicking some guy's ass on TV. What is this? And then I found out what pro wrestling was, and I've been hooked ever since.
Everybody, go to YouTube.com/Cotrera, and there's a playlist of Georgia Championship Wrestling up there. We got all the highlights, like Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer on there. It's awesome.
Tommy Rich got me in trouble in, I think it was probably junior high. I was reading a after mag called The Wrestler, and there was a picture of Tommy Rich, and I think it was during the Buzz Sawyer feud. He was bleeding from the top of his head, and the blood had run down and covered his chest and most of his stomach. He looked like a murder victim.
He was awesome at getting bleeding.
Yeah, and he knew the exact amount of aspirins to take and beer to drink before a match.
And the girl next to me saw what I was reading and got a little bit sick. And then she told the teacher why she didn't feel good. Teacher came over and confiscated my magazine. And I don't have it back yet, Mrs.
Okay, Garrett. I'm pretty sure Tommy Rich and Terry Von Erich were the two youngest NWA World Champions of all time, if I'm not mistaken.
At that time, yeah.
Yeah.
And he held it even shorter than Kerry. He only had like a 5-day run with it.
Yeah.
You know.
He'd be hardly racing and already beat him like 5 days later.
And Vince Russo stole the idea of Judy Bagwell from Tommy Rich, because you remember when Tommy Rich brought his mom to the ring and she got fucking pissed off and she went and she started hitting Harley Race in the back, like ever fisting him in the back. And Harley Race turned around and was acting like he was going to hit her, and then Tommy just went crazy and beat the shit out of him.
I think you're thinking of Jimmy Valiant.
No, this is Tommy Rich and his mom. This is probably before you started watching Couture.
Jimmy Valiant and Tojo Yamamoto attacked on TV one day, and Tommy came out.
No, I'm telling you, I'm sure they did that, but he did an angle with Harley Race where his mom jumped on, started hitting Harley Race, and his mom beat up Harley Race. No, I'm not wrong, okay. Goddamn it. I've been watching wrestling longer than you.
And I can remember, like, so much more than you.
Yeah,
and actually be correcting stuff I remember. So.
Yeah, that makes you more of a nerd.
You're a wrestling fan. You're calling me a nerd. You're a wrestling fan. You read comic books. Fuck off.
That's how bad you are.
Okay, match number 8 on the pay-per-view was Big Van Vader and Mr. Hughes. They defeated Rick Steiner, and yes, it happened again, and the Night Stalker.
And actually, I've called the Night Stalker was subbing for Scott Hall.
Well, I guess half a dozen in one, six in the other.
Wait, well, okay, you said he was subbing for Scott Hall. Was he the Diamond Stud, or was he Gator Skate Hall?
Diamond Stud.
Okay. The Diamond Stud basically...
Scott Hall in the rotation.
Yeah. Basically, The Diamond Stud basically was when he started to look like Razor Ramon, because before the Diamond Stud, he looked like Magnum P.I.
He had that big, heavy mustache. It looked like it weighed about 10 pounds on his face all those years. Yeah, this was when he first started looking like the Razor Ramon look when he shaved that mustache. And he shaved the mustache, and then he gained ability. I don't know what the deal was, you know.
Well, he was decent in the AWA when he first came out.
Yeah, but he was much better here, like Diamond Stud, and especially as Razor Ramon, he got much better.
Yeah. Mr. Hughes is just, I don't know what to say about him, but he was just a big dude, always wore like a suit and sunglasses. It looked stupid.
He was doing the big bubble gimmick. He was doing the big bubble gimmick.
Yeah, he was a black version of Big Bubba.
Yeah.
And
he was Luger's bodyguard at this time.
I always wonder why he didn't know when just didn't put... The what?
He and Vader were a good team. They teamed up a few more times after this, kind of pretty regularly. So.
I never understood why no one ever punched him right in the face between his sunglasses.
Well, Junkyard Dog did, and he shattered his glasses into his eye, but Junkyard Dog got the medical people, and then he turned babyface, and they had the dog and the cat as the tag team.
He was the big cat before that.
And then he had Rusev. I always enjoyed watching because he just beat the piss out of guys.
Going back to Mr. Hughes for a minute, I've never seen a man in low mid-card hell get so much out of a gimmick. I mean, Mr. Hughes took that thing to ECW and made a little career for himself just out of a really...
He had a sparkling jacket with Chris Jericho.
That's right.
Yeah. And he didn't even look the same because he had dropped like 100 pounds. He's actually thin. And I remember that one match he was like Triple H's bodyguard. You were at that show, Ed, when he took on Goldust for the Intercontinental title at that Royal Rumble? And Mr. Hughes was in his corner?
Yeah.
And then he also stole that from The Undertaker, like in 1993, I remember.
And wasn't he also like what's the word, an epileptic?
He didn't have the armband on when he was wrestling, unless I missed it. He says, I'm an epileptic.
Yeah, but he just would fall asleep. He's one of those people who...
Not epileptic.
I didn't say epileptic. I said nephilepic.
Well, that's not even a word. You meant narcoleptic.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop.
Continue.
Okay, back to the Tumblr. We got to hurry along, fellas. We're running out of time here. We got Marcus Bagwell and his tag team partner, Rick Steiner.
Okay.
Not a bad team. Versus That's very true. Versus Ron Simmons and Ron's tag team partner, Terry Taylor. This is a heck of a match.
Yeah, that's actually one of the better matches they've had on here.
Bagwell, I'm talking amongst yourselves. I'm writing here. Rick Steiner.
Well, what was the regular? Okay, Scott Steiner. Scott Steiner and Firebrick or Chip against the Wrecking Man and Johnny B. Bad. And those who don't remember Johnny B. Bad, it's Mark Amaro when he was doing a
Little Richard.
What the fuck was he doing? Little Richard. He was doing Little Richard. And he was actually quite good at it. And he had that fucking graffiti gun. And
that's right.
He was actually, Johnny B. Bad was actually pretty awesome. I enjoyed Johnny B. Bad. Do you remember a few months before Johnny B. Bad where he actually wrestled as Mark Amaro on Saturday night?
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty much got squashed. And I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, wow, this dude's got
a
physique. He might be somebody. And then he was just a job guy. And then so he became Johnny B. Bad.
That's right. That's the best looking sunset flip off the top rope I've ever seen.
The what?
Wish he wouldn't.
Best looking sunset flip off the top rope. It's like one of his main moves.
Yeah.
Went on to Minnesota.
The left hand, the disc that don't miss. Or whatever you call it. The 2D-30.
Yeah, and he had to wear a mask for a while because someone shot the graffiti gun in his face.
Max Payne did that, yeah.
Yeah, Max Payne did that. And then he got knocked out by Raven, And what the fuck was Raven's name? Was he going by Scotty the Body or
Scotty Flamingo?
Scotty Flamingo, and he got, because they wet his boxing gloves and he hit him and knocked him out.
They had the boxing match with the Clash of the Champions, and they filled Scotty's glove with water, and he just fucked him.
See, what they should have done is Max Payne took Johnny B. Badd's gimmick and it hit him in the face, so I think Johnny B. Badd should have had a guitar and hit Max Payne in the face with it.
And then he came back with, he still had the mask on and went up against a Shanghai Pierce in a mask versus mask match. And but he beat Shanghai Pierce, and who ended up being Henry Godwin.
That's right. Okay. And Max Payne went on to be Man Mountain Rock, right? So like a
in the WWF.
When he was Max Payne, he had like the shittiest fucking ring gear because he just basically had spandex on, that spandex shorts on that just did not look right on him.
He had some pretty awesome matches with, I want to say Cactus was his tag team partner for a while. And
yeah,
he was the Nasty Boy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay,
he also got paid to destroy a movie.
I remember that. He's coming backstage at WWE. I just remember I seen a preview of Bruce Coley drugged out of his mind, walking up and down the halls, wondering where his room was. While he got his, all he was wearing is his Fruit of the Looms.
Yeah, and then fucking X-Pac, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall are making like a drug deal and buying and pain pills. I remember though when I watched it was such shitty footage because I had a CompuServe dial up at the time, and. But I still saw it.
Okay, Richard. Last draw. Ricky Steamboat and his partner. There's only a few of these names left here. Bill Kazmaier. They will, of course, be wrestling if you're keeping track. Michael Hayes and his partner, Johnny B. Badd.
I thought you were going to say Jimmy Garvin for a moment, but I forgot we had already picked him.
Steamboat Kazmaier.
It would have been good when Ricky was in there.
The pay-per-view had Ron Simmons and Tommy Rich. They defeated Steve Armstrong and the very popular PN News.
I'll never forget when Vader broke his face and he was crying, dude. That was...
It was Mr. Hughes.
It was Mr. Hughes. Why do I always think it was Vader that did it? I always think it's Vader, but yeah, you remember his face just woke up, dude, and he was fucking holding his face and he was crying, dude. It was like, I'll never forget that visual.
I remember when they went on the European...
He had a good theme song, though.
I guess. I remember when they went to Europe in Steiner solo shoes. And in their shoes.
Okay, fellas, real quickly, we need to run down our card.
Okay.
And figure out who beat who. First match, as you remember, we had Liger and Sting versus Morton and Rude. Who wins that match?
Liger and Sting.
I agree.
Liger and Sting.
I still think
we have Brian Pillman and Elegante, probably do, versus Todd Champion and Larry Zbyszko.
Pillman and Elegante.
Yeah, the Elegante team.
All right, two against one. We have Rhodes and PN News versus Van Hammer and Mr. Hughes.
Rose and Pete.
Yeah, he's the only good wrestler in that whole darn thing. We have Luger and Scott Steiner versus Mike Graham and Big Josh. Do we even need to vote on this?
No.
Okay. Buddy Lee Parker and DDP. Abdullah the Butcher and Bobby Eaton. I vote for Eaton and the Butcher.
Yep.
Yeah, I was always a butcher.
Oh, part of me wants to see Buddy Lee go all the way, but I just can't do it.
We have possibly one of the better matches on the Power Show, Arachnoman and Vader versus Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong.
I'd have Vader and Arachnoman go over.
Vader would have been, you know, he was so far above everyone else. It'd have to be the Vader team.
We have Jimmy Garvin and the Z-Man versus Steve Austin and Firebreaker Chip.
Steve Austin and Firebreaker Chip.
I'll go with them.
I think you need to put Steve Austin in the main event. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no Rick Rude in there, so.
True.
You know.
So now we have Night Stalker and Arn Anderson against Cactus and Tommy Rich. I think this is kind of a no-brainer here.
I
hate to see Arn Anderson not in it, though.
I can't see the Night Stalker. But...
Another really good match here. Bagwell and Rick Steiner versus Ron Simmons and Terry Taylor.
Bagwell would just
he's just come in, so I think it'd be good to, you know, still have him like in that main event. It's kind of, you know, the newcomer going a long way, so.
Okay, and last match, Steamboat and Kazmaier versus Michael Hayes and Johnny B. Badd. I already know what the better team is. The other team has Steamboat.
I got to go with Steamboat because I just think he'd be better in the main event than the other two, even though he's got fucking his partner. I'm going with Ricky.
Yeah, okay, 2-1. That's fine. I think the other team is a better team, but Steamboat is awesome in his own right. Okay, so we've got 12 minutes of live air here.
In the Battle Royal, I think you still got to do the same thing with Sting and Luger at the end. Don't you?
I think so. That just makes as much sense.
I would have Luger in the first ring, and then I'd have it come down to, like, I don't know, Sting and Vader or Sting and Austin in the second ring, and Sting eliminates them, and then ends up with Sting and Luger, and Sting wins. So.
Yeah, at the pay-per-view, we had the Battle Bowl itself. You had all men starting in one ring, and the last man in ring number one was Big Van Vader. There was also a really cool spot where Richard Morton had a really good exchange with Liger. I absolutely loved it. So good. And a bunch of different highlights. One thing that I noticed as they were bouncing from one ring to the other, that was the most dangerous thing I've ever seen in my life. People were taking spills and getting caught up on the ropes and falling head first. And there was a lot of silliness there going from ring A to ring B.
Yeah. I never liked two ring battle rules.
But, yes, it did come down to Luger and, or excuse me, Sting and Rick Rude. Rick Rude got eliminated, correct?
Yes, and then he came back in and gave him Sting the Rude Awakening.
That's right. So Sting was hurt going into the finals with Vader. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Luger,
I'm sorry. Hello.
Yes.
So I'm getting confused. So, yeah, Sting was hurt, and tremendous sympathy for the babyface going into the final.
And they give out rings to the Battle Bowl winners at this point. They give them rings.
Cool.
Yeah, like Super Bowl rings.
Okay. Good gimmick. So, yeah, this is a
good gimmick, but... For a pay-per-view, not too many people are going to order a pay-per-view. They don't know what's on it. It'd be better to
like the previous month, from a Saturday night show to just do drawings every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
and
not
then
a bad idea.
And then have all the matches set, and you could even have like warm up matches with some of these weird teams. So
right. And I think if you got Pat Patterson's booking seal on this, I can't imagine he would do anywhere close to as bad of a job as booking this show. Pat Patterson is the man, and him booking Royal Rumbles throughout the years have always been absolutely fantastic. So I think you put his hand on this, and it would have been tremendous.
Yeah,
and then Billy Parker would have won because he would have came back and, you know, it would have been the greatest Rocky story ever.
But I'm fine with doing exactly what they did at the pay-per-view in our own little fantasy, quote-unquote, fantasy booking. The end of the pay-per-view was pretty awesome, and it was the best thing on the show. Well booked, like I said before, it was well booked, and enjoyed the main event tremendously.
Yeah, it was good.
It was a fun show.
Yeah, it was good. Ed, why don't you throw out the plugs?
Everyone check it out.
Go on WWE Network and check it out. Check the show out under the WCW pay-per-views. So. For $9.99, apparently.
All right, Michelle, let me give the real plug. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a whole lot of other shows at AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream this show at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrere and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. And you can also, if you check out the Uncle Mike and Tom show, episode 101, you can hear me on there being talking about the Inspire Pro Wrestling show that I went to a couple weeks ago, where I got to hang out with Mia Yam, Viva Bates, and Soul Darling. And so check that out. Craig, go ahead.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at my last name is Proper, P-R-O-P-E-R. It's pronounced Proper, but we don't need to go into that. Proper Jam on Twitter. Just follow me there. Had some great exchanges this past week with one Ed in San Antonio and Lance Storm, and also Lance Storm and Missy Hyatt early in the week when Missy chastised Mr. Storm for not coming to find her when they were in Charlotte, and Lance Storm flashed back to her, well, I thought we could just meet on jail cam later on.
Poor Missy, that was just so rude of Lance not to go find her and say hello.
Katria, you have anything to plug, my friend?
Katria35 on Twitter. Tweeted for the first time in like 5 years today.
That's right.
It wasn't much. But my phone was blowing up with tweets because everybody kept mentioning me in their tweets. So my phone was blowing up, so I figured I had to tweet something. And you can go to youtube.com/Katria. There's a lot of old wrestling up there. So go up there and watch it. Other than that.
Yeah, quick and find that on YouTube before it costs you $9.99.
That's right. And before they finalize the sale of all the Memphis tapes and all that stuff up there is going to be taken down. So go and check all that stuff out.
There you go. Hey, we got through it. We're actually done about 5 minutes early. Nicely done,
Bill. Cool. Do we want to talk about Alberto getting fired?
I guess.
Yeah, we can do that. Not a whole lot to the story.
Well, in this day and age, of course, he had to get fired. But reading what Dave reported, for a guy basically does a racist joke, or refuses to apologize, smiles at the dude, tell me you wouldn't slap the shit out of him.
Absolutely.
Depending on what nationality I am. Maybe if I was black, because that's only the real racism. Although the racism ain't that bad.
It's one of those things where it's like, okay, I totally understand why they fired him. I mean, physical violence is, you know, you can't fucking get away from that. But I can see where it's fucking justified. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this dude at the wrestling, he works for the fucking website or whatever. He's at the show. He's insulting one of the wrestlers. Did it to his back and then to his face. Did it like it was some kind of joke. I mean, if this was the 80s or 70s, he wouldn't have just got slapped, dude. He would have got the shit beat out of him bad.
And nobody got fired, except maybe the guy they got beat up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like I understand the firing, but in my mind, I think he was justified. I don't blame him for kicking the dude's ass.
Well, he was apparently the person with something to do with social media, so he probably deserved to be slapped anyway.
Yeah. You're the good Christian man, Craig. Would you have slapped the shit out of him if he did that to you?
Absolutely. I just told you.
Oh,
I don't even know what the whole story was. Did the whole story come out or something? I just missed it.
That's what Dave had put on one of the things on the front page. And he also talked about it on today's show earlier with Drew McIntyre, where basically the guy didn't finish all his food, or he didn't scrape his food off the plate or something, and someone called him on that, and he said, well, that's Del Rio's job. Someone told Del Rio. Del Rio went to ask him about it or told him to apologize for saying that. The guy refused to apologize and then smiled at him, and he got slapped.
Hmm. Yep, and kind of sucks. I mean,
your future team.
They weren't doing nothing with him, and it's like I say, TNA is already interested. AAA is going to be interested in Mexico. Him and Ricardo can now team in wherever they want to go, as far as indie dates or Mexico or TNA. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if both of them show up on TNA if TNA somehow gets TV or something. You know, if they do get TV, I can see Ricardo come in, do the big announcing for Alberto Del Rio, and you know, I can. They're going to be fine. It works out since both of them got fired. You know what I mean? It'd be different if just Ricardo had got fired, but now that Del Rio's gotten fired too, it opens the fucking gate for both of them to get co-work, and I think they'll be in demand. And I think they'll be all right. I'm sure he might actually be happier because he hasn't been doing shit in WWE for, like, such a long time. You know, they totally blew with the dude.
Yep.
He had momentum at one time. When him and Ricardo were together, they were great. I thought he was an awesome heel. And then they just fucking blew it.
And picking those two guys up as a package deal, you know, bringing them in together, I think that's that any independent TNA, whoever it might be, I think that's that is a good get.
Yeah. So, was there any? What did I'm sure Craig saw. Couture, did you see the shit with Johnny Bones Jones and Daniel Cormier at the UFC press conference or whatever?
Yeah, I saw that. I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah. Tremendous.
Tremendous. I do think it's the fight's not for a while, so they might peak too soon, but. Yeah, it's Daniel Cormier is the one that's going to make it because he's the one that's going to keep riding John Jones or just the one. He's the wrestling fan, so he's going to know how to sell it. But, yeah, that was tremendous, them fucking flying into the fucking backdrop and fucking all over the place. And then, unfortunately, it's not in the video, but Cormier took off his shoe, and fucking flung it at John Jones and hit this reporter, this girl named Heidi, in the face. And, that Cormier scored bonus points because I don't know about you guys are white, but all Mexicans, when they heard about the shoe, marked out, because if you're not Mexican unless your mom's taken off her shoe and flung it at you before.
I remember there was a point I think in TNA when Conan was throwing his shoes at people. I remember that.
There's nothing more dangerous than an old Mexican lady with a chancla.
Yeah, I watched that video. It was pretty good. I still have no desire to see them fight, but it was good video. Yeah.
Your thoughts, Craig, and then we'll end it.
Oh, it's tremendous. I can't wait to see the fight. There's never been another fight that I was disinterested in when I saw the hype for it. And granted, it's months away. I can't wait to see these two go at it. I think it's going to be absolutely awesome.
Yeah, hopefully. The last one that was built this well was Rashad and Rampage. That was built perfectly, but unfortunately the match sucked. Hopefully this won't have the same problem.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So.
But on that note, I guess we'll go ahead and end the show then, since we're actually still live, because I guess the church says for 2 hours, but we'll go ahead and end the show. If everyone come back next week, we'll come up with something for next week, and maybe I can convince Lance to come on, since we almost had him this week, but unfortunately dinner screwed everything up. But, we'll guilt Lance into coming on next week, hopefully. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everybody then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick! Let's go hook him up! I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is ours to play. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.